oh, hello.
Hello, do I smile and look away? No, I think I smile and stay.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in Portland. And if you're streaming online, you are listening in at KBOO.FM. Please remember that we are in the middle of Camp KBOO here in Portland. We are working on raising $50,000 by June 29th, and you have many opportunities to give. You can give at kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or you can send a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast Portland, Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. You've been listening to Radical Romance on KBOO. Coming up next, June Dirtbag. Oh, the Dirtbag is on this after, or right now after we finish here. So thank you for joining, and we appreciate you listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Camp KBOO is in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 29th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and support a summer of memories together.
Support for the Dirtbag comes from KBOO listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in Southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Now I'm a farmer.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. We are recording this program before the hot weather, and right now it's about a week before the program is going to be aired, and it's nice and cool, very nice to be outside. So we're not going to talk too much about the hot weather that we just had, but we will mention that certainly. So coming to me live from the Liberal Nook, off Highway 213, is Jim Gilbert. Welcome, Jim.
Morning, Glenn. Yeah, out here in Liberal, it's a sunny morning. Well, it's actually getting to 11 o'clock now, and it's a very nice day. I've been working since 6 o'clock this morning because it's it'll get warm in the afternoon, and I hate sweating, so therefore I got a bunch of work done now, and happy to be talking with you.
Well, we since this is a recorded show, we won't be able to take live questions and answers, for that matter, for the Garden Stumper, which will be at half past the hour, but the first person who is able to write in to us this month at thedirtbag@kboo.org will win a free hand garden tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland, corner of Northeast 42nd and Alberta Street. So we've got a full show here today, and we will talk about the Arctic Beauty Kiwi. That's our plant of the month. Jim will, I'm sure, sing its praises. We'll also talk about first fruits. It's in the season now where things are going to start hitting us soon, but We already have, of course, quite a few fruits in the garden. We'll also spend a fair amount of time talking about drip irrigation and the options that are available. Jim, of course, has, I don't know, how many hundred acres do you have there that you're farming, Jim?
Well, we drip irrigate probably outdoor, probably 5 to 6 acres.
That's enough to know what you like and don't like about it.
It's enough to see a lot of drips.
Yeah. So to speak. And yep. Let's see, half past the hour, a new garden stumper. Then we will talk about watering and weeds, and also how temperature affects how much water you need to do and what kind of weeding to do depending on what the temperature is. How about that? Also, a short segment on about hand pollination. We talked a little bit about this last month and what Lorraine has been doing, but we'll spend a little bit more time on that. We'll have the our Dirtbag Dictionary term is seed stratification. And then a documentary update. And we have Joe to thank, too, here. Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, who is helping us with, not only helping us, he's making this whole recording possible. So, Joe, you're our hero today. And a lot of times, too. Okay, just a short thing of what I'm trying to understand here. And that is this is not very important at all, but why it's repeatedly that the seasons, summer, fall, winter, spring, continue to be capitalized by many people in their writings, but they're not capitalized. That's just the way it is. I don't care. I know what they're trying to say anyway.
Yeah, an interesting question that I've been struggling with a little bit is the writing of AM and PM.
Yes, me too.
I see, you know, sometimes it's capitalized, sometimes it's small case, sometimes it's got periods after the letters, sometimes mm-hmm. it doesn't.
Sometimes there's a space between them, sometimes there's no space between them.
Yeah.
So I mean, between the time and the A or P.
Who makes the final decision on how proper
well,
to write?
Well, what I oftentimes follow, and you may be aware, many people don't because it's so long ago, but I did put out 2 Oregon trivia board games back in the mid-80s and then the early 90s, first generation and the second generation. And my go-to at that point was the AP style book, Associated Press style book, and it still is. They're the ones, of course, that have been given the axe at the White House because they refused to call the Gulf of Mexico anything except the Gulf of Mexico. So anyway, that's what I think the AP style book is a good thing to know about if you're doing any kind of writing.
And I hate to ask you this to take up any more time with it, but what is the proper way to write AM, PM?
Yeah, well, they would be able to tell you there. I don't know. I think it's lower. I don't know. I would guess lowercase with periods. But we'll have to check that out and we'll find out.
Sure. If any listener can write to us and tell us what they think it is, that'd be kind of a fun thing to hear too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, Joe, do we have any time left to talk about gardening? Yeah, I guess we do. Okay. As normal, we start out with what tool we've used the most, roughly, in the last month. Jim, you said you had a new one.
Spade.
Uh-huh. Well, you did tell us the difference between a spade and a shovel last month, so we must still be using that.
And the spade is a very handy tool when you're planting things because it digs a really nice hole. And, you know, if somebody's trying to plant with a shovel, I pity the efforts.
Yeah. How about that? Okay, a spade. Well, I think what I've been using most recently, I've been planting a lot of the veggies, they're transplanting them in. And so it's probably a toss-up between my post-hole digger, which I use to kind of mix in the amendments that I do use when I'm planting tomatoes or peppers or something like that, and then a hand trowel if it's a small pole that I need. But I probably use most our 5-gallon buckets because I'm hauling compost from the compost bin to the beds. You don't normally think of a 5-gallon bucket as a tool, but there it is. My beds are pretty close together, so there's not room for a wheelbarrow. Jim, did you have something to say?
Well, I was just thinking about all the other things you could try to be defined as tools, like, you know, your belt or...
Yeah, I suppose so. You're right. Jim, we only see Jim visible from the waist up here, so we don't know if his belt was in use today or not.
Well, I went this morning. Was cold. I mean, it's been 42 degrees out here the last two mornings.
Whew.
And so I go out with full with, you know, pants and a long sleeve shirt, and then about 8 o'clock the sun is hitting me, and then I go to shorts and a short sleeve shirt. Chilly mornings.
Yeah, I was up at 5:30 today to get some bees ready to go for somebody to pick up at 6 o'clock. So we were both up at the same time. Okay, well, let's move on here. As this is a garden variety show, our plant of the month, Arctic Beauty Kiwi.
Yes, and Arctic Beauty Kiwi is a very favorite plant of mine because in the process of discovering it, which was happened for me 40 years ago plus, it inspired me to write to the Soviet Union. The Latin name for it is Actinidia colomicta, and it was not a plant that was well known in North America, but I read about it in some Russian literature, and actually the name came from my own inspiration and talking with a friend about it, because it really didn't have the name Arctic Beauty, but it's a member of the kiwi family, the edible kiwis, which of course include the big fuzzy one, and then what we call hardy kiwi. So people call it kiwi berry, which is a smaller, smooth skin type. And Arctic Beauty is more similar to that hardy kiwi, but the fruit's a little bit smaller, but it is still smooth skin. And among its wonderful traits are incredibly colorful foliage. And the very interesting thing about the foliage is that it starts out green and then starts changing color as the foliage matures. So it'll start out green and then it'll have a white area that will work its way into the leaf. And I had a friend recently call me and say, does my plant have a disease? It's got this white spots all over its leaves. And no, it's the leaf doing this. And then after the white part moves about a third or more into the leaf, a pink section starts at the beginning. And so it can have these beautiful green, white, and pink leaves. My only guess is it's something it learned to attract bees or their insects to its flowers, which are rather small. But that's one thing that's really wonderful about it.
When does it start turning white and then pink?
Well, right now.
Oh, right now being early June. Right. Mid-June.
Early June. Late May, early June, the white part starts, and then probably another 3 or 4 weeks, the pink will start.
Okay.
Another wonderful trait about it likes shade. So as compared to the other types of kiwi, which you want to put in full sun, Arctic Beauty Kiwi is a nice plant for a more shaded area. It probably wouldn't be happy underneath a Douglas fir tree or something where it didn't get any sunlight at all, but it naturally grows in foliage in trees in its native environment, and it's very happy with some shade. That's kind of a nice, it's a nice ornamental plant with very tasty fruit.
What did in the Soviet Union areas did it have a common name?
The kishmish was one that they called it in the Soviet Far East, which most people in that part of the country think of as what they call grapes. But they called this Arctic Beauty Kiwi kishmish.
Does that mean grape?
Well, yes, but it also obviously must mean Arctic Beauty Kiwi.
Yeah. All right. And do they act as pollinators, or do they need a pollinator or pollinizer?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. So it's a good idea to plant two varieties for cross-pollination. And and they are pollinated by bees like other kiwis are, and the you can pollinate them if you're concerned about the pollination, which we'll talk about a little later about hand pollination. You can also do that moving. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm incorrect. You don't need two varieties. You need a male and a female.
Oh, okay. The same as the other types of kiwis.
That's right.
Too.
That's right. That's right. And of course, the male won't bear fruit, but actually the male typically has even more colorful variegation on the leaves than the female does. Over the years, we've chosen females that have more colors, so that's what we offer at the nursery, in which many garden centers have those varieties from us.
All right, and the male of one of the hardy kiwis wouldn't pollinate the Arctic Beauty kiwi.
In theory, it can happen, but the main problem in that is that the Arctic Beauty blooms earlier than the other ones.
Okay.
So it's the timing would be the issue with that.
Oh, I see. They are compatible otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's Arctic Beauty. Is that what it's known now in the Western world, Arctic Beauty?
Arctic Beauty. No other name I know of for it.
Yeah, good one, Jim.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Okay, well, we'll take our first musical break here now. And the theme, since we're going to be talking about drip irrigation, our theme for the music is drop by drop, although none of these really have anything to do with water. In fact, the first one is, I wasn't familiar with this. Okay, a group I've never heard of, Explosions. That's hip drop. Maybe that's a dance move that I don't know about. Okay, we are in the early fruiting season here. It's a wonderful time of the year because more is coming. And we know strawberries and honeyberries are producing prolifically now. And I've also had a few raspberries not as many of the strawberries. So, Jim, you don't grow any strawberries, but you said you've been eating some.
Yeah, they're very popular in my neighborhood. Apparently, there's some people, small scale farmers, have been popping up and have little yard, little stands, farm stands, and they're darn good, Glenn. I'm just thrilled to get a, you know, I like just have fresh berries is great. So, and you know, I like, there's one place over in Hubbard that I like because I get to pick the ones that I want to eat, and I don't, you know, sometimes they'll put them in a little container for you, and then there's sometimes a kind of a mixture of ones that are fully ripe and maybe ones not quite so ripe. I like them when they're really, really sweet and fully ripe. So, but yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, like, you know, bring me more.
Well, there's also rhubarb. We've been having rhubarb for a month or more, but that, you know, is that a fruit? Doesn't matter. First produce, we'll say. Of the
tastes like a fruit.
Well, with enough sugar.
Yeah. I like the rhubarb's great.
Yeah. We've been having, my wife has made a compote, a sauce made with crystallized ginger and maple syrup as a dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And tasty. Tasty bits. So let's see, and maybe the next time you get some of these strawberries, Jim, you'll ask them what the names of them are, what the variety is.
Yeah, well, I've heard some of the names, and honestly, they must be newer ones because they're not locked into my mind like the old varieties. I mean, Hood, you know, that was one that was grown here for 50 years, and still, it's a really good variety. But
yeah.
I think they're choosing them. The ones that we've gotten recently seem to be a lot bigger than the old the old ones.
And they may hold up better in rain and the dampness too.
Yeah, probably so. But yeah, it's certainly worth the effort to get some of those. Get some local berries. I mean, I would encourage listeners to go, you know, checking history here, sort of similar to Arctic Beauty Kiwi. It was a plant that was not well known in America. In fact, it was didn't even have a name, the fruit or anything. And it's a member of the honeysuckle family. Therefore, when we started growing it, and I brought those also from the Soviet Union back in the early 90s, the name honeyberry just sort of seemed to fit because it's not so much because it tastes like honey, but it is in the honeysuckle family, and it is a tasty berry. And over the years, we've selected some varieties that bear quite well and have really good fruit and very nutritious as well. A dark blueberry that has lots of anthocyanins.
Okay, well, you know, vegetables, we've been eating vegetables since, I don't know, February, you know, some of them, you know, the greens or even some peas and things like that. But fruits are just a harbinger of late spring and summer.
Yeah, I was actually in Hood River recently and eating wild asparagus,
which
is kind of fun. When I lived in Hood River, on the farm I was living on, there was wild asparagus plants, and it was such a joy to go out in May, late May, and harvest asparagus.
Well, are you referring to a different type of asparagus, or just some that have escaped?
Yeah, they're bird. Yeah, I'm sure the birds are the ones that have been. You know, if you let an asparagus grow, it will make seeds, and birds eat them. And of course, you know what they do when they eat the seeds. They go through a different process.
Yeah.
Through their pipes, so to speak.
So it's not like there's for lack of a better word, a native asparagus. It's just asparagus that grows wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. In as I've traveled through eastern Washington on the way to Walla Walla, for example, where they do grow a lot of asparagus, it just grows along the side of the road. You know, it's a weed, almost.
I don't know, Glenn, if you were around when that book was popular, but I remember from the late 60s the book Stalking the Wild Asparagus by Ewell Gibbons.
Yeah, many parts are edible, as he used to say on television. Have you ever eaten a wild hickory nut? Many parts are edible. Yeah, I just remember that. That's what Ewell Gibbons used to say on the television ads. Oh. Or he was pushing something, maybe that book.
Interesting. Where I was living, there wasn't any television in the place where I was living when I was stalking the wild asparagus. Oh. It didn't even have electricity there.
Well, that explains some things.
stories abound, as they say.
Yes.
But we're gardening right now, so.
Right. Okay, well, it's half past the hour, or it's past half past the hour, so that must be time for the Garden Stumper. Okay, well, this is a very easy one, and it doesn't have much to do with edible gardening, but it has to do with gardening. And this is a garden variety show, and it is simple. Roses are to Portland what flower is to Florence, Oregon. So roses are to Portland as what flower is to Florence. And they honor this flower with parades and other things. And it is only 1 year younger than the Rose Parade or the Rose Festival. So it's been going on for decades. All right, if you know the answer to that, the first person who has the correct response emailed to thedirtbag@kboo.org will win a sharpening of a garden hand tool. That's a spade or a pickaxe, depending on where you are in your garden. A hoe, shears, loppers, you got the idea. Okay, let's move on. Drip irrigation. And we'll start this and then we'll get into our second musical break that has to do with drops. How long have you been doing drip irrigation, Jim?
Well, that's a good question, Glenn. I would say for at least 30 years.
Okay.
We've always had this commitment to conserving our natural resources here. Mm-hmm. And so drip irrigation was a total... a great fit for us, and we don't have huge amounts of water, and so it was, again, just really has worked out very well. And drip irrigation for us is two different ways we do it for larger plants that are spaced 4 to 6 feet apart. We typically, now we're talking about, not like the homeowner, we're not talking about homeowner plant, we're not homeowner planting. You probably have maybe those even further apart, but in our what we call our mother block and our experimental areas, that's the spacing we will typically use. And for those, we use like a poly pipe with emitters every spaced out for all along with the plants. When we plant things closer together, like berries and so forth, then we use what's called drip tape, which has holes in the material itself, and those holes spacing can vary depending upon how far apart the plants are and stuff like that. But typically, anywhere from 8 to 12 inches is the normal spacing for that type of drip tape.
Just so we can differentiate between the two types that you've described there. I mean, drip irrigation, or maybe a better term just for the encompassing would be trickle irrigation. And these can run from types of hoses that people are familiar with, maybe the soaker hoses that are round and black, oftentimes made from recycled tires. And yep. It just kind of weeps out along the whole length of the hose, and it hooks up to a regular hose bib, and then has an end, or you can make your own ends and whatnot. And those are certainly more efficient than the overhead watering, but not as efficient as these two that Jim was mentioning there too, where you have these emitters, where you decide where the emitters are going to be. You know, sometimes they have a tool that you can punch little holes in and then you stick these emitters in, and they emit, I don't know, Jim, you probably have a better idea, you know, half a gallon an hour or a full gallon an hour or whatever. Do you typically recall?
Yeah, we typically use a half gallon an hour emitter. It's a relatively small amount of water, but you know, if you can leave it on for several hours, and it'll do a really good job of watering. The difference, of course, when you have emitters versus what you were talking about, the soaker hoses, you can decide where you want the water, where you want the water to be. You're not watering anything that doesn't need it.
Right. And the drip tape, which is generally flat, is that how it gets its name? Tape? Those are, the holes there are manufactured into the tape. You don't choose if it's 8 inches apart or seven or whatever. It's just that hole. It's consistent.
But you choose the spacing.
You choose when you buy it.
When you buy it, yeah. What the spacing should, what spacing you want, and you would choose the closer together if plants are closer together. If they have a little more room between them, the wider spacing works fine. So,
I didn't make that clear there, but you don't really have a choice after. When you get the tape, you can't really add any more or take them away.
That's right.
And then how do you, Jim, hook up that tape to a main line, if you will?
Yeah. So what we do here is another issue to consider, and wherever you get the material from should be able to give you this advice, but whether you need to use a pressure regulator or not, and what kind of pressure regulator to get for it, but what we do is we have the main line has a pressure regulator, and then we have all of the lines that run from it have valves that you can turn off or turn on, and then basically we run a main line, and then we run the side the lines going off to the side.
Do you have to get special fittings? I mean, you must get fittings. I mean, they're not screwed on like a hose, are they?
No, you get fittings. They're typically, I'm not sure how you just, the pressure, you push them on and they're tight and they stay on well. I mean, the main problem, since we don't use high pressure lines, we don't need, you might need it in some cases a even stronger way, or a clamp or something to hold the pipe onto the fitting if it was under a lot of pressure, but we don't do that.
Well, in the city, at least in my neighborhood, they've really jacked up the pressure. You know, there's a lot of building going on around here, and I recently repiped a neighbor property here, and you know, I had to add pressure regulators for the water heater and just everything, because I think it's 90 pounds or something like that. So there's a lot of pressure in the city now. So you probably would very well want a pressure regulator. So let's take our second musical break here. And this is from Tower of Power. And the song is called Drop It in the Slot. This is from the album called In the Slot. Tower of Power.
One, two. Stop it!
Tower of Power, In the Slot, from that's the album. Drop It in the Slot is the name of the tune. Okay, before we leave this talk of drip irrigation, can you mention where you got your stuff? I think you can get it in a lot of places, but if there's a specialized place, that would be great.
Yeah, and I imagine, you know, in Portland, there's probably some irrigation supply places. I think any place that is known for supplying irrigation materials should be good for this. We patronize a place in Candy called Fisher's Supply. It's been around for probably longer than I've been living in this area. And they're very qualified. They've got like a showroom where you can go and you can get all the fittings, everything you need from them. There's also a very good place over in St. Paul, a nice little community called Ernst Irrigation. Those are the two local places that we use, and we find very reliable, and the material they supply is very good quality.
Yeah, I'm thinking I want to move some of my beds into drip irrigation, or actually, tape. This is all good information, Jim. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Well, we've apparently had one hot spell, and we'll have more. And that leads us to once again talking about water. And we're going to be talking more and more about that. We just haven't had much natural rainfall here in the last month. A little bit, but not much. And plants need supplemental water. We've talked in the past about, you know, how we need to pay more attention to those plants that are in pots because they have a tendency to dry out quicker. You want to add anything to that, Jim?
Well, Glenn, I would, you know, it's funny out here at the nursery, people, I think that the general feeling is the watering is sort of like the lowest level job, you know, where there's so many more exciting and interesting ones to do. But I argue that that's the most important job.
Yeah.
And because when we drew a lot of container plants, and you know, you can quickly slow down the growth. The plant can suffer and can die.
Right.
Very fast, you know.
All your work is just gone.
Yep. It's very, it's a constant effort to make sure that the plants get water. Now, a plant growing in the ground, there's a lot more reservoir there of water, but when it's in a container, that once that gets dry, that potting soil gets dry, the plant's got no place to get water from. I mean, it's gone, it's done. So yeah, I advise all listeners, you got plants in containers, be careful. And you know, you don't need to water it every day constantly, because that can kill them too, but just, you know, monitor it. On a small container, it's pretty easy to do that by just picking it up. You know, that's what I do. And I can tell right away if it's got a reasonable amount of water, or if it's getting pretty light, you know, well, if I know it needs some, even though it may not be showing signs of drought yet, the weight of the container will give you a really good clue as to where it's at water-wise.
What are your thoughts about having a reservoir of water? How long do you think that a plant could just sit in some water, you know, in hot water, hot weather, before it's, you know, becomes, you know, I don't know, waterlogged? You know, it seems to me that it's better to have a reservoir and risk having too much water than risk having not enough water. What do you think?
By a reservoir, you mean like some vessel that's underneath the plant holding the water?
Yes.
You know, I've really never done that. I mean, as a general rule, but I think the idea would be if you had a fairly shallow amount of water and the plant could pick it up as it needed it, that would probably be okay. The thing you don't want is to like just keep the roots constantly surrounded, because unless it's an aquatic plant, the roots will not be happy. They need air.
Yeah.
So,
but if you know it's going to be 100 degrees or 95, you know, and I do this sometimes, you know, is I'll water them, I'll overwater them so they make it through the day. I mean, they use it up or it evaporates through the day.
Right. A big consideration is the root system itself. A plant that is in a pot that has, that we call a root bound, where it's just full of roots and it's really needs to be in a bigger pot, is what we would think of in that case. That dries out much faster than one that has plenty of space for the roots.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Be careful if you've got one. If you've got plants that have been in, I mean, my work has been transplanting plants from, in this case, from a pot into the soil. But some of those pots that I take off, the root system is, it's a major piece of exercise for me to loosen that root system up and make it so it can be happy in a new environment. They dry out super fast that way too.
Okay, well, this is the hottest months are July and August, so just be prepared to enlist your neighbors if you're going to go on vacation or try to figure out a different way.
Yeah, it is definitely difficult to potted plants, especially out in the in the bright sun. I mean, they'll dry out pretty quickly. Hopefully you have reliable neighbors.
yeah, that's it. One more thing before we get on to our hand pollination. The type of weeding that one does changes, I think, when the temperature is hot or if it's cold or cool and the ground is wet. Particularly now I'm talking about in pathways. But if it's hot weather, it doesn't really do much good to try to dig up the weed, to try to pull it out to get as much root as you can, because you're not going to get much root. So what I tend to do in that case when it's hot, and I appreciate and I like it when it's hot, and I go out there and do this, is that I use a hoe, and I'm just kind of skimming over the surface to get top kill. And then those weeds are going to just dry out immediately. If it's moist ground, and cooler back in March or April or even into May, depending on your soil too, then you can try to get more of the root out, but it's not worth the hassle, as far as I'm concerned, to try to do that when it's hot. Just get as much as you can out and go on. Alrighty, moving on here to hand pollination. Have you been doing much hand pollinating there, Jimbo?
Well, one of the main reasons I wanted to talk about it is because of feijoa or pineapple guava, one of my favorite plants. I'm sure listeners know about this. It's native to Brazil, New Zealand. We did a lot of work with it. We've traveled to New Zealand and we've gotten the best varieties in the world now. It's a beautiful evergreen shrub with striking flowers. The only problem with, at least in pollination, is in their native environment and in New Zealand, they're pollinated by birds that eat the sweet flower petals. And as hard as I've tried, I haven't been able to talk the chickadees into doing that. And so remarkably, there are some insects that will do some work with it. But for most reliable method of getting good fruit set, as we found, is to do it by hand. And it's not a painful process, because while you're doing it, you can also eat the flower petals, which are pretty good. But basically, you just take the flower from one, by taking the flower off the plant, you of course won't get fruit on that particular flower. But once the plants get some size to them, they usually have a lot of flowers, so you don't need to worry too much about losing a couple. And just take from one variety and go over to the other one, but shortly right after they open is the best time to do it. And you'll see in the center of the flower a little pistil, and just take the stamen, the part of the other flower that you're going to pollinate with, for the yellow stamen pollen, and just dust it on that center part, and voila, you will get fruit. But of course, you can also do this with other plants too. I mean, if you we do it We do it on purpose, and occasionally, you know, for breeding purposes, where we will isolate flowers and bag them and so forth, and then open them and then take flowers from a specific parent plant we want to cross with another one and do that kind of pollination. And you can do it with, if you don't have a lot of bee apton or other insects flying around your other fruiting plants, even fruit trees, you can go and do that as well. Just move some pollen around from flower to flower by moving. You can collect the pollen sometimes, and just like a little vial of some sort. Just dust the pollen into that, and then take a little brush and take it over to another flower. Or just, if you've got plenty of flowers, just move the flower itself and play bee. But the only requirement is you have to make the buzzing sound.
Yeah, that would be another Dirtbag Dictionary, because there is a term for that,
for the buzzing sound,
for bees that vibrate the blossom to free up pollen so they can get it. Like some bumblebees do that for tomatoes.
Interesting.
And if you watch them, you can watch them and hear them on tomato. You know, it'll land. Bzz, bzz, bzz.
Cool. Yeah. That reminds me of some of a suspect I forgot to mention when we were talking about honeyberries. I discovered that honeyberries are pollinated primarily by bumblebees. They seem to be, they like them.
You know, before we leave this topic here, we were talking about the two crops that we have on Desert Kings. And yep. The first crop doesn't require pollination, if I understand from our discussions in the past. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Then what I've forgotten is, well, why does the second crop need it?
It's a type of fig. It's one of the San Pedro type figs, and they you know, for some reason evolved where they don't need it for the brava. We call it the first brava. Crop. They call it the brava crop, that's on the old wood. But the fruit that forms on the new wood needs pollination.
Okay. And so the difference is, you know, where the fruit is for one, old wood versus new wood. So that might have that obviously. Well, I shouldn't say obviously. It appears that has something to do with it.
It's just because. Like, for example, a common fig, a variety, like I have two out just outside on my fence out here. I look at them all the time. When the variety that's been around Portland was like law has a long history in Portland, probably from almost over 100 years ago, called Latarula, which has probably another name, but that's what the guy who was promoting them in Portland called it, Latarula. It's a common fig. So it bears fruit on the old wood, and then it bears fruit on the new wood, and neither one of those require pollination. And and interestingly, the seeds of that are not fertile; they're empty, has seeds, but there's nothing in the seed.
Is that the case with, for example, the first crop of Desert King, the Brava crop?
Yes. No, the seeds are not fertile. Uh-huh. You got to have pollen. You need a, and that's why it's so fun to travel around Italy, because you find. There, because they have the fig wasp and the seeds are fertile, you find seedling fig trees all over the place. And some are pretty good, and that's how they've come up with new varieties.
Yeah. Okay, well, our time is running short here, so we better get our last two topics in here to our Dirtbag Dictionary, seed stratification. Jim, you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting subject, because if you are growing... It depends on the kind of thing you grow, of course, from seed. You know, vegetables don't require stratification, as far as, I mean, the ones I know about anyway. I'm not a super vegetable farmer, but for fruiting plants, if you want to, like, for example, you've got a cherry seed and you want to grow that the tree from that seed, it requires that seed has to go through a cold period before it will germinate. And that's the case with a lot of different kinds of hardwood seeds. And that time usually it's kind of nature's way of protecting the young plant that would come from the seed if it didn't require any cold period, and those seeds would just immediately germinate. Well, imagine like a pear would drop on the ground, the seeds would start to grow, and then you'd have winter, and winters can be cold, really cold, and those little tiny plants that would grow would die. So nature says, hey, you gotta wait. And that's, so the winter to the winter, winter is essentially the seed stratification period. But if you're gonna do it in a nursery like ours, you do it artificially. You put the seeds in a cooler, basically a large refrigerator is what we do, in a moist environment, like sawdust or peat moss or something that keeps the seed moist, not super wet, and keep it cold for, depends, the period of time depends on the type of seed, but typically 3-4 months is enough, and then the seed will be happy and grow.
So it's somewhat similar to the frost or the cold period, the chilling hours that we've talked about in the past for a plant.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Yes. So that's seed stratification. Yep. And then there's other types of things that other types of seeds need to go through, whether that's scarring or, you know, a little nicking or something like that. But we can come back to that at another time. So, okay, Joe, we have a few minutes left. 2 minutes, something. Jim, what's the latest? Jim and Joe, what's the latatest on the documentary?
Well, it's an exciting time, documentary time, because we Joe and I are now working on the classroom version of the film, and this is one we are hoping to get into schools around Oregon. And coming up in the middle of June is an Ag Teachers Conference. And we're going to be, we have a time slot there, and we are going to be able to show a short trailer of the upcoming film and talk with ag teachers about it, and hopefully get them excited about sharing this amazing story about Oregon and how, I'm always amazed when I think about, how well we protected our farmland. And out here where I live, I'm surrounded by hazelnuts and blueberries and vegetable fields and cows. And when I look out my window, there's not a subdivision in sight. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, let's try to keep it that way. What level of school will be?
Level? Yeah, high school, you know, community college.
Okay.
And just in case any listeners haven't had a chance to watch the actual An Oregon Story movie, we have a website where you can watch a short version, a 25-minute version, or a full 83-minute one and be inspired. And that is www.anoregonstory.com. And you can go there and watch a really neat story about Oregon.
Nice. Okay, Jim, we're out of time.
It's been fun, Glenn, like as usual, and it's interesting to do it remotely. But
yeah,
I'm glad we were able to
do it. We're able to do that. That's right. I'll be out of town for the next show, so we'll pick it up live probably in July. I think I'll be around. Jim, are you going to be around in July?
Yep. Be here.
All right. Well, we are in the middle of our. I don't know if it's the middle, but we are in the midst of our summer fundraiser. So you can always go to the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and donate here. So, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, thank you very much for setting this all up. And of course, then he has to edit it a little bit too, but he gets to listen to us more, Jim. So, Jim Gilbert, thank you very much. And
too bad, Joe.
We'll just take our time right now for our final musical selection with the theme of drops. And this is an old recording from the Guess Who. And the song is called Of a Dropping Pin. We'll be back live in July. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Take my pride with me, if I had something I could carry it in. got hopes and dreams too high. I've searched too long for all the answers, let alone the right to try. To think that you can take it with you is the one forgivable sin. But all that breaks the stillness now is the sound of a dropping pin. From the silence deep within comes the sound.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.